Good evening, everyone. We will begin this public input session regarding MDU rate case number PU-17-295. It's October 25th, 2017 at just after 5 o'clock p.m. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Commission, and I'm joined by Commissioner Brian Crosius to my right, Commissioner Julie Fedorchak to my left. So we have a quorum and a full attendance. Just a slight bit of background, but first a couple of announcements. I don't see Daryl Nitschke here, but he's around here someplace. He's at the door right now. This doesn't affect you all in the five surrounding communities, but our Capitol building is locked up by security at 5:30 p.m. So you're free to leave till 5:30. After that, don't wander down there, please. If you need to leave early, you got to find Daryl, and he'll escort you out, or wait till the meeting's done. He'll take everyone out at once. And so keep that in mind. We will have the company go through some slides initially and kind of present so that the public is aware of what the proposal really is and some background on it after our opening comments, and then we open it for public discussion. The company will ultimately have to go into far more detail to us throughout the hearing process than what will be tonight, but this will give you a pretty good background of what their proposal and their reasoning is. When we get to the public comment part, remember we did this for a couple hours last night. If someone else has stolen your thunder, you know, maybe it's good to still get up and point out that you agree, but we don't necessarily need to have everyone hear the same thing many, many times over. If it's already been said, just mention that you agree with that point. A couple things on the case itself. The MDU applied for this increase on July 21st of this year, and I guess as a commissioner, I feel a need to kind of take these rate cases as sort of a balancing act. We all want low rates, and so I guess the easy thing to do would be just say no, or maybe force the company to lower the rates from what they are now even. But we also have a responsibility to make sure that the company is strong when there's a big problem, pipeline is disrupted or something like that. We want them to have the ability to bring in contractors, get equipment, do the kinds of things to make sure we have a safe and reliable system. When we get a rate case, we divide our commission up to some extent because we are ultimately the judges in the case. The company brings their case, and they're striving to convince us that they merit additional money. And we appoint some of our staff as advocacy staff. They are what advocacy would do. They advocate for the consumers. Victor Shook is our lead on it. There are two others. But that is their job, and they're here hearing your concerns, and they will evaluate and make your points and others' points as we go through this. We also have advisory staff. They are the ones that we discuss the case with. They're not for or against. They're working with us, helping us to understand the details of the proposal and make sure that we follow the law. Jerry Lean back in the corner is the lead on that, on our advisory staff. People can comment throughout the process. The ultimate hearing will be in February. Throughout the process, you can call the commission and talk to advocacy staff. You can also email us at ndpsc@nd.gov. Or tonight, we will also field questions, and Victor's advocacy staff would ask them if someone wants to email him, and that's the reason he's up here, because I want to emphasize the advocacy staff, just like the company, we do not have ex parte communications with them. Our only discussions with advocacy staff has to involve MDU, and our only discussions as consumers would want it with MDU about the case has to be open to the public and include the advocacy staff. So tonight, if someone has a question and would like Victor to ask it, or a comment, I guess, is even more appropriate, because this is really more about public comments than questioning. But the email address to contact Victor is vshook@nd.gov. V as in Victor, S-C-H-O-C-K, at nd.gov. And he will bring your comments up to us throughout the course of the evening. We have the Bismarck facility here and five other regional locations, and so we'll kind of bounce around and take comments from those as we go after MDU is done. For now, I'll turn it over to Commissioner Fedorchuk for any comments she may have.
Thank you, Chairman. Well, good evening, everybody. It's great to be here again tonight and see a few new faces, a few repeats from last night. And I can't really tell how many folks we have out in our other locations, but it looks like the crowd is maybe a little smaller from last night, but a few new folks, too. So we're glad to have you, and thank you for taking your time to be here to tell us what you think about this or what your concerns are. I think we had 15 or so folks speak up last night, and many more attended and didn't speak, but I appreciate you taking the time to hear about the proposal. There's been a lot of information sent around. I think some of the interveners, the AARP, has done some mailings on this issue and alerted folks to it, and I appreciate their being involved. It's always good to have folks from the public being engaged, because otherwise it's the three of us trying to figure out what we think is best. So I really do appreciate their involvement. I do think some of the materials they've sent out had created some confusion, and I don't think that was intentional. I'm not suggesting that, but I think anytime you put something in writing, it lends itself to interpretation, and I think there's been some confusion over what was sent out. And so hopefully tonight you'll have an opportunity to hear exactly what is being proposed. And I want to emphasize, this is what's proposed. We go through a very elaborate process that will take many months. This is just the very beginning, evaluating what their proposal is and tearing it apart and looking for ways to reduce those costs, making sure we think that what they're suggesting they need is what we agree that we think they need to provide safe and reliable service. That's the ultimate goal here. And then once we determine what that requirement is, what that revenue requirement is, I think they've asked for $5.9 million. It'll most likely be less than that. Then we divide that money up into the rates based on who causes and benefits from the cost increases. That's just in a nutshell how our process works. You know, we heard a lot last night about the challenges of folks on fixed incomes. I really appreciate that. We know that this is a difficult. Anytime costs go up, it hurts everybody, and especially those on fixed incomes. So appreciated those comments, and heard plenty of concerns about the basic service charges and some concerns about some of the proposals that the company has for how they want to pay for safety improvements in the future. We'll take all those concerns to heart and really dig into them and bring our own to the table as well. So thank you for being part of this process. Look forward to your input today, and hopefully you'll feel that in the end it makes a difference in what we finally do.
Before I turn it over to Commissioner Crosius, who actually the rates are his portfolio, and then he'll do a fine job working through this, but I was asked a question right beforehand and then almost forgot to address it, and that was, what is the responsibility of the consumers? What do they have to do to prove to us that the answer should be no to a rate case? And the burden of proof, I think, was the question. And to my mind, you don't have a burden of proof. To me, we start out at a rate, and we take comments as we are tonight and throughout the process, as I said, and those help us to ask a lot of good questions and get a lot of good information. But to me, the entire burden of proof is on the company to prove that they need any additional dollar that's going to be granted. And if they can't prove the need for that, then the rates ought not be going up. And so the burden of proof is entirely on the company, in my mind. With that, I'll turn it over to Commissioner Karashas to lead the way this evening.
Well, good evening, everyone. Thank you for taking the time to be here. The public input portion of the process is incredibly important, and we did hear from a number of people last night, and there was a common and understandable theme, and that is it boils down to affordability and also questions as to why the rates are going up. And again, that's completely understandable. People, there are a number of people on fixed incomes, and everything adds up. We live in an era where everything seems to be rising dramatically, whether it's health care costs, just general cost of living. You throw utility costs on top of that. I can't remember the last time cable or anything went down, so it all continues to mount and add up. And consumers feel it, and the people we represent feel it, and we totally understand that. And it's important that we hear these comments because it's something that is taken into account. It's taken very seriously. This is a unique venue. You don't have many opportunities, really, when you think about when services go up for whatever it might be. There aren't a lot of opportunities to stand up and voice your opinion. It just happens, whether it's with groceries or other things. So this is unique and from that standpoint. So I was glad people took advantage of it last night. I would encourage that same level of participation again tonight. And I sincerely can say that your voice is heard in all of this. Just some points I'd like to make. The formal hearing on this case is scheduled for February 28th, and we anticipate that will last approximately 3 days. So that gives you a little bit of a time frame on the process. We have until November 10th to accept any other petitions to intervene. We have two interveners at this point, and as Commissioner Chrisman mentioned, we have advocacy staff that does a lot of heavy lifting behind the scenes. They spend hundreds and hundreds of hours looking at the numbers, dissecting those numbers, and as Commissioner Chrisman also pointed out, ultimately the burden of proof to justify the increase does fall on the company. So we take a very close look at that. And one other point, we also hire outside consultants, or an outside consultant in this case. It's PCMG and Associates, and they will also be digging into the case itself and helping to assist us in analyzing the request and seeing what the factors are to justify the increase. Just a couple of numbers that I believe will be mentioned, but the basic service charge being asked in terms of the increase, it's at $19.60 right now, and the company Montana Dakota Utility is asking to move that to $22.58 for an increase of $2.98. So that is the number that they have requested that they're proposing be considered by the commission, and again, we'll take a very hard look at it. So I don't have any other comments. I'm anxious to hear from the public, but first I believe we will hear from Montana Dakota Utility.
And thank you, commissioners. My name is Travis Jacobson, and I am with Montana Dakota. And next to me is Pat Darris. He's with the operations group. And then next to him is Jordan Hotzenbuehler, and he also works with me. We just have a very short presentation. We've got a slideshow up there, and we'll try to give you an overview of the reasons that we are filing and the impact to the customers. I think the commissioners covered this a little bit of what was the theme for the meeting last night, but I'll just cover it again just to kind of get a little more perspective on that. There were really a few recurring topics last night, and Pat, Jordan, and I will each add a little bit more information. But the three topics that kind of came about is the monthly charge moving from $9 to $22.58. What is this new automatic daily surcharge? And then finally, does Montana Dakota receive support from or provide support to our other business units within MDU Resources? It appears that most of the confusion stems from some press releases and advertisements which were circulated. It's disappointing that our customers were provided this information because it is misleading and it's truly not accurate. Specifically, the monthly charge. I'll direct your attention to the presentation. And our current charge, as Commissioner Crosius mentioned, is $19.60. And the request is to move that to $22.58. Again, $19.60 to $22.58, or an increase of $2.98. The reference to the $9 really stems back to, you see in there, there's a blue bar and a green bar. There were a couple components. We changed the rate structure, and it wasn't an apples-to-apples comparison. It was an inappropriate comparison, and I think it caused a lot of confusion last night. Another observation relative to this graph is just the value of natural gas, and the one area we've been in right now with the production in North Dakota, and Commissioner Crosius just mentioned it, there's very few things that have went down, but the cost of natural gas for an average customer has went down, and that's our rates today, as we've proposed, would be 27% less than they were 10 years ago. So that's the value of natural gas delivered to your home. The company has also proposed a pipeline replacement mechanism, but it's certainly not automatic. The company is not able to just tack this on. It's not an open checkbook, and it would have the same scrutiny, and the commission has the same authority and obligation to review a pipeline replacement mechanism as they do in a rate case. The commission, they mentioned it, they go through a rigorous review. Currently, we have hundreds of questions from the advocacy staff as well as their consultant, and we work through those. We do as diligent a job as we can to provide those data requests back to them. And again, a reference to an automatic tracker is inaccurate. And, you know, in all honesty, an increase in rates is never desirable. And we do our best to maintain a safe, reliable system, and we want to continue to do so well into the future. It takes a strong company to do that, and we try to manage our business in that manner. Finally, if Jordan can turn the slide one more, there were a number of questions or probably confusion relative to MDU Resources and then how that fits in with Montana Dakota's gas operations in North Dakota. We do a separate accounting of all of Montana Dakota's gas business. There is no subsidization between the electric and gas business in North Dakota or with Knife River or any of the other companies that are shown on there. There are other utilities, gas distribution utilities in other states. But again, they're all accounted for separately. And finally, we prepare an annual report, which we provide to the commission every year for our gas operations. And we work through that with them. We answer any questions that they have of that. And it's certainly open for further scrutiny, regardless of whether we're in a rate case or not. Now, just a general overview of our gas distribution operations in North Dakota. As you can see on the screen there, we have about 109,000 customers. The vast majority of those are residential customers. We serve in 74 communities. The red triangles are the town border stations where the gas gets delivered to our system. We are a distribution system. Similar to a cable, a municipality, if they have a sewer or water system, we have pipes in the ground. We have buildings that we need to be able to operate out of. And it's really a very fixed cost nature of the gas just comes to our town border stations and we deliver it. Customers have the same benefit of gas delivery, whether it's in the summer or the winter. And that's why we like the fixed rate. There's that access to that gas all year round. We work hard to maintain a safe and reliable system. And the other piece of this is, which is really not part of this case, but it's the delivery of the natural gas. I mentioned the value of that. We spend a lot of time getting gas to our customers, and we purchase gas from about 20 different suppliers. We're able to buy it right from some of the processing plants or the producers in the state, as well as we have access to pipelines throughout the whole upper Midwest. We take advantage of gas in the summertime when those prices are a little bit lower, or when we see an opportunity to access gas that's a little bit cheaper, and we deliver that into storage, and we're able to use that storage then to deliver that gas in the winter. And it generally helps offset those prices, to offset the winter prices. We do not own the transmission between our communities. We have to contract for that, and we do not have natural gas production, gas wells, or processing plants that we own and operate. The customer is responsible for the gas. We do not earn a profit on gas. Whatever we pay, we provide it to the customer, and it's if it costs us a dollar, we provide it to the customer for that same dollar. Commissioner Christman covered this. I'll just quickly go over it. We did file an application for a rate increase in July of this year. The request was for $5.9 million, which represents about a 5.4% increase. And it's a change, again, just distribution. We're just distributing that gas once it hits our town border stations. The primary reason for the increase, our gross investment in North Dakota is $275 million worth of assets that we've purchased. Generally speaking, it's our distribution system from our town border station to our customer's house. That is about an 18% increase since we were last in front of this commission. And much of it is to enhance reliability or to replace our aging infrastructure. Within this case specifically, we have included about $32 million of spending within the state. And in 2018 alone, we have about $5.5 million worth of safety investment, which is Pat's going to talk about a little bit more. I did mention a mechanism before for pipeline safety. In our filing, we've termed it System Safety and Integrity Plan. And it's kind of a long name and might be challenging for some folks to interpret that. But really, this is a mechanism that we would file on an annual basis. We would prepare a plan prior to implementing the rate, prior to getting it approved with the commission, and then we would track and be responsible and accountable for the dollars that we actually spent and that it was done in a prudent and diligent manner. So with that, I'll turn it over to Pat.
Okay, thank you, Travis. So as he mentioned, we are filing a formal System Safety and Integrity Program, or what we're calling for short, SSIP. I'm going to discuss that a little bit, and then I'll also go into trying to give you a general overview of our distribution system. You saw the slide that Travis put up there that shows the areas we serve in North Dakota. I'll get into a little bit more detail, breaking it down into a typical town. So when you look at MDU in general for North Dakota, we serve, or we have 2,575,000 miles of distribution main. And with that is about 110,000 service lines in North Dakota. So that's really what the operations group oversees. He mentioned the aging infrastructure that we have. If you look at our overall infrastructure, approximately 25% of that is older than 1970. And then if you break that down even further, if you go to a pre-1980 pipe, it rolls up to about 45% of our system is older than pre-1980. And the reason I mention that is because this SSIP really focuses on a couple of main pieces of pipe, and that is our pre-1970 steel and then also our pre-1980 plastic pipe in our system. Really, the replacement of our system, when we look at it in this SSIP, it's driven by federal regulations. State follows the federal regulations, but that really is what guides us to look at what pieces of our system are the riskiest and which pieces we need to remediate going forward. So again, what we've focused on in this SSIP plan is pre-1970 steel and pre-1980 plastic pipe. If you go to the next slide there, this is really what we're calling a distribution system. So this is what we have. This is the information we have on our system. In this case, we're calling out New Salem. The reason we called that out is that is one of the towns that we will focus on next year in 2018 that we plan to replace the pipe. When we say we're going to replace the pipe, really it's the yellow section there. And when you look at that, we call it out as 2,570 feet of steel pipe, 370 service lines, and then also 45 meters would be moved out from the inside of a home to the outside. When you look at that pipe, again, we're saying it's pre-1970. Most of that pipe, when we pull it up on our system, was installed between 1955 and 1965. Again, there's a portion of plastic pipe that's kind of in the lower left-hand section there that was in the 70s, but the majority of that pipe, again, is in the 50s and 60s. So that's really it's a high level. Again, we've got those same type of maps for all towns in North Dakota, and that's really what drives this system safety integrity program that we're planning to roll out. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jordan and let him discuss the costs associated with that.
All right. Thank you, Pat. As Pat said, my name is Jordan Hutzenbühler. Thanks again for coming out and learning about the case and providing your comments. Travis and Pat have done a good job of explaining as to why we have this proceeding and why we're requesting the increase. What I'm going to attempt to do is briefly cover how that's going to impact our customers. What, in terms of dollars and cents, what impact is it going to have on you? As mentioned previously, we're requesting a 5.4% increase in revenues overall. Our review in this case has indicated that the residential and the general service customer groups are not covering their fair share of the costs, meaning they're not providing enough revenue under their current prices to support the costs that we have to serve them. So it's for that reason that you'll see that the residential group, customer group, is just seeing a slightly higher than the overall increase. And then further, there's three remaining customer groups that we're proposing to leave their prices just unchanged because they're currently and are proposed to adequately cover their cost to serve. So we're just proposing no changes to those groups. And those are the Minot Air Force Base and small interruptible customer group and then the large interruptible. And just to give you an idea, so general service, that could be your Walmart or your local gas station or grocery store. A small interruptible customer might be a grain dryer on a farm. We can turn that service off if necessary. And a large interruptible customer might be a refinery or a processing facility that they have a backup generation source or a backup fuel source where if we need to disconnect their service temporarily, we have that ability, and they've agreed to allow us to do that. So for this slide here, I've basically laid out what your prices are today and what they're proposed to be. As you've heard a number of times, your current basic service charge is $19.60 per month as a residential customer, and it's proposed to go to $22.58 for a $2.98 increase. You only have two components on your bill, on your natural gas bill right now. There's just that basic service charge, which is priced as a daily fixed amount. And then there, the second piece is the actual cost of the gas, the natural gas that it takes to heat your home or fuel your fireplace. And that's currently right around $4 per decatherm. A decatherm is the unit of gas that you use. And right now that's about $4 per month. So what's important to note here is in this pie chart, the cost of gas, this red piece, that's about 60% of your bill. And the blue section, the basic service charge, that's what this case is about. This is what we're proposing to have an increase on. But what's important to remember is that for every decatherm less that you manage to use to conserve, if you turn your thermostat down or you upgrade a home and you achieve efficiency in that manner, you're going to save $4 for every one of those decatherms. So there is still an incentive to conserve as a consumer. We still have the ability to reduce our own overall cost because a majority of your bill is the cost of the commodity itself. So Travis had this chart up here earlier, and I think it's important to revisit, and I'll just point out a couple of things that are apparent here, I'd like to make apparent. First, as a customer myself, I'm pretty happy that my bill is over $200 less than it was 10 years ago, a decade ago. Again, that's thanks to the low natural gas prices that we've achieved in that time, or that we get to benefit from. So that's the first thing I'd like to point out, is that, as Commissioner Krosh has said, not many things have decreased lately, but your natural gas bill actually has in the last decade. Second, it highlights the influence that the price of natural gas has on your bill, like I just spoke to, because that red piece was and still is by far the biggest component of what you pay. And lastly, you'll notice the green portion that was in 2008 and 2013. And Travis spoke to this, and I'll just briefly touch on it. That went away. Those dollars are now just collected in the blue component on the current rates and the proposed rates. So when the $9 to $22 comparison was made, really for a typical customer, $6 of that actually is just collected in a different way. It's collected in the basic service charge. A typical customer was always paying it previous to that. And so yes, we've had increases in the past few years, but we just think it's right and that you deserve to see the full picture, and which includes understanding the commodity price impact, the price of natural gas, that how that impacts your bill, and then also understanding that an entire component of what you've paid in the past went away in the last rate case that we had. And this slide is basically an expansion on the previous one. A lot of times we speak to a typical or an average consumer based on their consumption. So right now, average consumption for a residential consumer is 91 decatherms in a given year. However, we recognize that a lot of our customers, our residential customers, don't fall right in line with average consumption. So here we're just showing what a low consumption consumer's bill would look like in the same four time frames, and then also a high consumer. And what's important to note, I think, is that it still highlights that we have an ability to reduce our own bill by conserving. If that weren't the case, all three of these numbers would be the same thing. So right now, a low use user does pay significantly less than an average or a high use, and that's, again, because how much the cost of gas or the price of gas impacts your bill. And also worth noting is that low use doesn't necessarily mean a small house. High use doesn't necessarily mean a big house. You could have a very small, inefficient home, for instance, that very easily use 150 decatherms in a year. So just to wrap up, this proceeding is about investments that Montana Dakota has made in its system and continues to make to maintain and enhance the reliability and safety of the pipe that we've got in the ground that's there to serve you and provide you access to a very low-cost fuel source. Just to reiterate, it has our other, the Montana, or the MDU Resources companies, the other sister companies, have no bearing on this case or any other Montana-Dakota rate case proceeding. This is strictly regarding North Dakota, Montana-Dakota gas. So I just wanted to point that out one more time. And again, the residential impact is proposed to be a $2.98 per month increase. And lastly, the SSIP that Pat discussed is not proposed to be an automatic increase to your bill. It will receive the same scrutiny and review of the commission that a case just like this one has. So thanks again for your time. And Chairman, I push it back to you.
Commissioner Crash, any other thoughts before we go to the public?
No other thoughts. I would say let's hear from...
Okay, we'll open it up for some public comments here. Who wants to be the first to step up?
Good evening, Commissioners, MDU persons. My name is Tom Hansen, Mandan resident. I have kind of a little problem with your last comment that MDU doesn't support or profits don't support your cement companies in Oregon and your holdings in Florida and your defunct plan you had in South Dakota. Where does that money come from? It comes from the parent company, which is residential gas people. No comment. Must be right. Thank you. Also, it says here, MDU also wants to fast-track a new daily surcharge policy that would further rate increases would become easier or quicker, whichever might be. That was in the Bismarck Tribune the other day. I didn't get here yesterday, but I was doing yard work, and I was pooped.
Tom?
Yes?
While you're kind of between sentences or between points, I just want to point out for you and for everyone, when people make a point, the fact that MDU doesn't jump up and say something doesn't necessarily mean they agree. And we'll give them a chance at the end to dispel things. But, you know, these things fall apart if everybody's going back and forth on every point. So they're not going to get to interrupt you now. And so people can make their points. And sometime at the end, we'll try and give MDU a chance to counter some things if they feel that they were incorrect. So
very good.
Go ahead.
Appreciate that. And now I kind of lost track of one other comment I would have liked to have made. Maybe I could yield to somebody else. Am I allowed to return to the...
If we don't run out of time, if it doesn't get too late, yes, we'll...
Well, you won't run out of time because if I relinquish this, I could probably go on a little bit longer. But I do thank you very much. That was my concern is the rate increases. Oh, the part of this increase you want, you said that most of your pipelines were installed in the 50s and 60s, and then your one slide said 70, up into the 70s. My question would be, how much money for this new rate increase that you probably won't get would be earmarked for... repairing this gas line as we go down the road. 5 years from now, will you come back and ask for another rate increase? Am I doing this okay? Mm-hmm. Would you ask for another rate increase because now you need money to repair the 2017 gas pipes that are going in? This is an important subject because it's all money. And the money's coming from residential, the majority of it. And those are questions that I think we should ask and hopefully can be answered. Okay.
Thanks, Mr. Hanson.
I relinquish. I shall return. Thank you.
Anybody else here in Bismarck with comments? We'll jump then out to Williston. Do we have anybody with comments in Williston this evening?
Nothing in Williston.
Okay. How about Minot and the campus of Minot State University?
Yes, we do.
Go ahead, go first.
Oh. I just have a question, and I'm probably pretty naive, but
start with your name, please, and the community from where you live.
Okay, I'm Lorene Ness, and I'm from Minot, North Dakota.
Okay.
And I'm just curious, the natural gas that is pulled off of all the oil wells and stuff like that, is that something that you guys are able to use? Is it actually usable natural gas for MDU, or is it not?
This isn't like a question and answer thing. You throw out your comments that you have a concern and wondering about that, and at the end, MDU will answer the things that they can, and also our advocacy staff makes note of things, and many others are answered along the way. So duly noted that the public is wondering about the gas from our oil industry, and I'll venture out and just say, yes, that is what we use here, but in general, questions won't be answered one by one.
Okay, all right. So I guess the point I was trying to make is that in the last 6 years, they've had more resources than what they've had in the past, but I see, they doubled their surcharge in the last 4 or 5 years. What did they do with that extra money? And I know that they're not going to answer that right now, but I'm just curious as to where that extra money went, because their overhead must have been less because they were able to collect the money off of the natural gas or the resources off the natural gas from the oil well.
Interesting points. Was it Lorene or Lorraine?
Lorene.
Lorene. Okay. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Thank you. And did someone else behind you have comment?
Yes. I have a big concern also about my income. I am on a fixed income.
And your name, ma'am?
I am. Name is Myrna Berg, and I'm from here in Minot.
Thank you.
And the Senate has passed their budget. The House has passed their budget. And because I'm a federal civilian retiree, the House budget includes a reduction in my retirement pay, a systematic reduction in my retirement pay. Now, I realize that the Senate and the House have to get together, but here everything is increasing and the possibility of my retirement decreasing concerns me a lot. And I realize that this increased operating expenses, that there will be a portion of that spent on MDU salaries. Please consider those of us who will not have that much coming in because of all the other expenses that are being forced on us. Thank you.
And thank you, Ms. Berg. Was there another one in Minot before we move on?
No.
Okay, let's jump out to Dickinson State University. Do we have anyone at Dickinson this evening?
I'm Keith Mercer. I'm a resident here of Dickinson.
Keith, did you say Mercer?
Fernsler. F as in Frank, E-R-M-S-L-E-R.
Thank you.
Last comment that the gentleman from MDU made was that the SSIP would have the same scrutiny as all of the other rate increases, and that's not true because it doesn't require public hearings or public notice. It's decided strictly within the organization, within the Public Service Commission. And this concerns me because when I speak to our local legislators and our national representatives, they talk about the importance of transparency, but there's been an erosion of transparency on many fronts, and this is another instance where the transparency, the ability of the public to know what's going on, would be diminished. So I'm concerned about that, and I understand your approach that this is not, strictly speaking, automatic, but it suggests to me that the procedure would not be as transparent as this procedure, for example. Thank you.
And thank you for that, Mr. Frenzler.
Mr. Chairman, if you want me to wait, this is Josh with ARP. If you want me to wait so you can go to the other site, I'm happy to wait. Or if you want me to make a few comments now, I'm happy to do that now. I'll wait your direction.
Why don't you go now, but I didn't catch your name, Josh, your last name.
Josh Astrid, Director for ARP in North Dakota.
I'm sorry, I can't see you.
Does it change your opinion?
Big time, Josh.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
We'll go around the horn, Josh. And for those who couldn't understand it, Josh is with AARP. They're an intervener. And so they'll have probably more chances just in case we run out of time or something. If you don't mind, Josh, I'll just hold off on you.
Not a problem at all.
How about Valley City? Do we have anyone else?
No, there's nobody in Valley.
And how about Lake Region?
No customers here.
Well, here's your chance to pretend like you're one of the customers and go off to the side so we can't see you, and you can say whatever you want to the company. No. Okay. Terry, did you have anything else you wanted to add from last night? You had opportunity last night, but we don't need to repeat what was said last night.
I'll try not to go into that.
But
I'm sorry, I should get up here to the podium. I did a little bit more investigating. Sometimes I do understand. Let me start this over. We're all here.
And you are Terry Schult of
Terry
Lincoln,
S-H-U-L-L of Lincoln. And we're all here. We know that what we're concerned about, again, is more money out of our pocket. that's what we're all here to say. Well, we can't afford it. We can't afford it. But what I'm also looking at is I'm sorry. I've lost my train of thought. It comes down to trying to, we're not doing any burden of proof. We're not, all we can do is say, we can't afford it, we can't afford it, we can't afford it. So you go back in February and you're going to sit down and say, do they deserve it or do they not? And you know all customers are going to say, they can't afford it. You're going to look at the burden of proof for them that they need to make a profit. I don't blame you for that. What I think about, or today I investigated, or I called an insurance company just to, I inquired on a question that this $3 that you're trying to impose, and thank you very much, that I'm not paying the full brunt to have my line replaced, but just the $3 accumulated for everybody that's in your service area, the 94,000 residents, okay? Back when MDU was doing this servicing, when you were putting your pipe in the ground, you had to have insurance to make sure that pipe doesn't burst. You're paying insurance, aren't you, every time you put in a line for burst? I'm assuming even for when it rusts out, or unless your company was naive enough to think, oh, geez, it's going to last forever. Now you come back and you're saying, gosh, you know, that pipe is starting to rust out. Now, with all the profits you're making per year, now you want to charge us to replace that pipe. It should have been in your prospectus, or your the amount that you always per year, the basic rate should have included that, a 1% for your customer. But in the long run, you're also, you've got to have an insurance company that says, well, we're going to cover you in any type of damage that is done. Isn't it? Aren't you insured?
And Terry, to kind
in
of...
In a sense? Right.
Let me just see if I understand your point, because we're taking public comment. I think your point is, if I would compare it to private ownership of an automobile, do I wait until it's worn out and then be shocked, or did I kind of save things a little bit during the time I was operating it, knowing that at some point it would wear out and I'd need to replace it? And so the point is, we should explore what they have done to prepare for things just becoming obsolete or worn out, correct?
Yeah, okay, that's good adage. Well, it just comes down to, if you've got profit, I don't see why we need to have another $3 pay balance on our bill.
Thank you, Terry.
Okay.
That's it. I kind of missed, I went over the top of you, sir. Did you have, front row. Did you have any comments that you want to add?
No, I'm just here to gather information.
Appreciate you being here.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Fedorchak.
This was a comment that came up last night a few times too, about saving for the future and replacing. And I it's a very logical concept. And I think, you know, to some extent, utilities can do that. But there's also a rate-making principle that isn't real apparent to the public that really calls for the ratepayers of today to pay for what they're using today. And so if you're paying for something down the line, you might not be around to benefit from it. And so we try as close as possible to match the expenses for the system today with the people that are using it. So there's just, it's one of the principles. It's not entirely perfect, but it's something that it might make sense to think, like, would you want to be paying a bunch of money for future changes to the system if you're going to leave and live in a different area and maybe you're going to move to Texas or someplace else or take a job someplace else, and then that money you paid for future changes to the system, you won't be benefiting from those. So that's the alternative to the concept that you're saying, and it's a balance that we also take into consideration on all of these things.
So at this point, I am going to thank Mr. Josh Asvig with AARP for being patient and allowing the public folks that are here to go first. I don't remember, Josh, did you say in Dickinson?
I've got a consumer here that wants to say something, so if it's all the same to you, I'll let them go because it's more important for you to hear from them.
Okay, and then you can follow up.
Hey.
Thank you. Nice to see everybody. My name's Richard Danza. I live out of Dickinson.
Richard, I didn't catch your last name, please.
Benz is B-E-N-Z.
Thank you.
My comment is, I'm a retired state employee. Living in Dickinson here, some of the increases that we're going to see, our taxes are going up $93 a year on a $250,000 house. Our city's looking at recycling garbage. That's going to cost us another $6 to $7 a month. We had the MDU electric increase here a while back. That came in at $4 a month, and now we're talking another $3 a month for replacing the MDU gas line and stuff. And I can understand there's stuff that's old that needs to be replaced, but I'm thinking a fairer way to do it, wouldn't it be to add it to the price of the gas? I know that usage varies from year to year. In a good year, you know, they probably make more money than they need to do their replacing stuff. In a bad year, it might go the other way, but to me, it would be more transparent that way. You know it's in the price of your gas, rather than giving us the gas at cost, as they're saying. So I think that would be a fairer way of doing it, rather than adding it to everybody's bill every month. You know, I'm not sure how the accounting is done on all this stuff, but this will be that up to you people. That's what we trust you to do.
Appreciate that, and advocacy staff is making a note of your thoughts on that. Thank you, Richard.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, Josh Aspen again, the State Director for AARP. I'm not going to repeat what Mike said last night because I think he did a fine job from what I heard in giving kind of a high-level overview. I do want to make two or three quick observations, though, and specifically, I appreciate the company putting together the PowerPoint proposal, and I'm going to specifically talk about slides 11 and 12 because I think they highlight the big concern that we have addressed on the fixed charge. The first thing I do want to say is that automatic is probably the wrong term. We probably shouldn't have used that term, but we certainly do contend that it is far less scrutiny under the proposal in terms of the system safety and integration procedure or program, or sorry, I don't have it in front of me. So appreciate that and appreciate the company for recognizing that and pointing that out. And so the second thing I just want to add, I'm specifically talking about slide 11 now. And I think this is a perfect illustration of the concern we have about the last proposal and again this proposal. Is you continue to see, as the cost of gas decreases especially, but it would be true in any instance, how the portion of the bill that is unable to be adjusted based on your usage continues to climb. And I specifically want to go back to 2013 and compare it to what's proposed here. And that's what we were talking about when it was the $9 fixed charge. And yes, there was a volumetric distribution charge that did recover some of their costs, but it was based just on that, volumetric use. In other words, the less gas I used, the less they collected in that green bar area. In the last rate case, they shoved that into this fixed charge, or over the course of 2 8 rate cases, I guess, is probably the appropriate way to say it on the natural gas. They shoved it into this fixed charge so that you see under that current model, what is labeled as blue is all fixed. As a consumer, and specifically as a residential consumer who is bearing a majority of the increase in this proposal, you continue to see that climb. That blue bar continues to be a larger percentage of my overall bill. And I don't have the exact numbers because the numbers aren't laid out, but just eyeballing it, it was approximately 1/6 of the bill as a fixed cost in 2013. Based off of their own testimony tonight, it's going to be, if the proposal is approved as structured, approximately 40% of my bill. And we continue to see this creep towards fixed costs. And so I do take issue with the fact of, well, you're still able to regulate a portion of your bill by reducing your debt returns. I agree to an extent, but you're continuing to erode consumers' ability to control their rates based on usage when you allow the company to continue to add more into the fixed charge. So I'd offer that for comment. The second thing I would flip to is slide 12, just for comment. And I think, again, this is an illustration of the concern we have in terms of what they're doing to rates and eroding them. Specifically, appreciate the illustration that rates are less from 2008 overall. I think that thank you to the oil boom and the influx of natural gas, that natural gas rates have come down and certainly helped all users of natural gas, not just residential users, is true. But what you see is, specifically, if you look at the orange and yellow bars on slide 12, you'll see the spread between low use and high use is pretty wide. When you look at the gray and green bars, you see that margin tightening. In other words, they're starting to get closer and closer. Now, granted, there's still a $400 gap between low use and high use, but you see that risk being squeezed out of the company's profile and put onto consumers, and specifically, if you look at low use, over the last 2013, the current and the proposed, they all see an increase and a step up. And it's hard to tell and illustrate in terms of percentage-wise based on this chart, but at least based on the appearance here, you see the typical use and the high use. Actually, high use saw a dip, and then it goes back up. And so you continue to see the impact on folks as they try and reduce their use that they're less able to control those costs and keep that spread versus those who use more gas, specifically on the residential side. And so, again, I appreciate the opportunity to comment. I appreciate the company walking through the proposal again, and we look forward to continuing the conversation in February. Thank you.
While we're on the Dickinson screen, is there anyone else there? We'll go around one more time around the horn. Anyone else at Dickinson with comment?
No.
How about Valley City? Anyone show up there yet?
Nope, there's no one here.
Okay, Devil's Lake?
No one here.
How about up at Williston?
Comments here.
And lastly, but not least, Minot.
Nope.
Okay, sir, have you changed your mind in the front row that you might? Okay, then we'll give, before we wrap up, we'll give MDU a chance to respond to if anything was said that is just, they feel factually incorrect or anything like that. And again, while they're thinking about who's going to comment, I will say, you know, all these things have been noted now by our advocacy staff and will be explored in the coming months, and this will be a much more in-depth procedure when we get into the hearing, and that's when our advocacy staff will be getting a lot of answers on these things.
While they're still debating, the eyes we have 15 seconds.
Sure.
Thank you. Again, my name is Tom Hansen.
Since I interrupted you last time.
Oh, no, you're fine. Thank you very much. My question or comment that they can relate to you during your discussions, MDU, they're stockholders that own stock in MDU, and MDU is proud in the paper whenever they publish their profit-sharing reports, stock market reports. And I'm wondering why, and again, they'll discuss that with you, why this little increase that they're talking about, this small percentage, why that can't be absorbed in reducing the profit on your shareholders by how many millions of shares are out there. It might amount to 30 cents a share. Something that you might want to discuss. I think the money is there, but I think they're just looking for another way to bring some more revenue in instead of using the monies they have to budget. Again, I thank you very much.
Thank you for making the point. Nicole, were you going to?
I'm Nicole Cavisto with Montana Dakota Utilities, and just want to provide a couple comments. Appreciate the opportunity to respond, and also thank you to all of our customers here and in our five locations. We appreciate your input. A couple items just that got brought up that I'd like to clarify is the difference between MDU Resources and MDU. As we did note on the chart, there is a distinct difference, and I just wanted to clarify that this case is solely on North Dakota Gas for Montana Dakota Utilities, and we get a lot of data requests, so you can rest assured that folks here at the staff are certainly probing into what is included in this case, and it is completely separate from what's happening at Knife River, what's happening at WBI with the refinery and whatnot. Do we have a technical glitch that I need to address before we...
We just found the chart that you were talking
about.
So,
yeah, basically this lays out our sister companies, and I know as we're talking about MDU Resources and the profit that we report as a corporation... Again, this case separates all that out and strictly focuses on what investment we need to incur to serve our North Dakota Gas customers. So just wanted to clarify that that's what is included in this case. The question that came out of Minot in terms of do we get gas out of the Bakken to supply our customers, we certainly do take advantage of the low-cost gas coming out of the Bakken. I think the next question as it relates to that was, so then why can't we take some of that money and maybe set that aside as a profit. And I think we addressed that in our comments, but just to clarify, the cost of gas or the price that we pay for the gas, so if we can get a lower cost gas out of the Bakken, what we paid for that lower cost gas, we charge you the exact same number. So we do not make any profit as a company off of the cost of gas. So what we're purchasing out of the Bakken, taking advantage of that lower cost gas coming out of the Bakken, is the benefit goes straight to the customer. On the SSIP, there was a comment in terms of that, basically the safety integrity plan that we filed. I think we've got that clarified in terms of that not being an automatic adjustment. There were also some comments provided in terms of whether those are noticed. Those are noticed, and the commission does have, again, the opportunity to weigh in on that and provide comment. And at this point, I would just echo that that is a proposal on the table. It has not been an approved mechanism by the commission. The last thing that I had, and then I'll look to the team if there's anything else, was in terms of the comment you provided on insurance. We do carry insurance for damage to our lines, but insurance doesn't cover replacing pipelines. So, I mean, it covers, you know, covers some catastrophic event in terms of damage, but it would not cover replacement. And I think from a rate-making perspective, Commissioner Fedorchuk commented on, you know, rate philosophy in terms of current customers paying for future replacements. So those were the things I had. Travis or Jordan, was there anything else we want to clarify?
I guess the only other thing that I, there was a, Richard and Dickinson asked, couldn't we put the increase on the per unit gas? And Josh Asvig also mentioned that they prefer to have some variable. Just from a real basic perspective, the cost that the company has in June is about the same as the cost the company has in January relative to providing gas distribution. It's really not different than a city's sewer system. It's there. It's there to serve it. If you go south for the winter, there's still that same level of cost for the infrastructure. And again, that's what we are. We're a distribution system. So the cost is there regardless of whether a customer uses one decatherm or 10 or 100. So the idea that it should be based on variable is something that we've worked towards getting rid of for a long time, and it's really for the entire distribution system. Pat covered that. He talked about a town border station all the way to the meter. That's all items that are in the ground, on the ground. We're serving those customers, and those costs are very consistent. Percentage-wise, when the cost of gas comes down and the other part stays, even if it stays the same, you do have less opportunity to save, but at the same time, those costs that are fixed are fixed. That's why we went to a fixed rate in the first place. And I think that was all. Did Jordan, did you have anything else? Thank you.
I think there was a question about, is the natural gas that comes off of an oil well, can that just go into your pipe and be used?
I believe, generally speaking, the gas is probably not quality for the home, but there are a number of processing plants in North Dakota that the gas in that Bakken area, northwestern part of the state, is delivered to those processing plants, and there's quite a number of them, and that gas is then made pipeline quality. And that's the opportunity that we have. We buy a lot of the gas directly from those processing plants and get that gas right off of there.
And so I'm going to just throw in some, because I have found in these last 4.5 years that that is a common misunderstanding, that the gas is just about free because, after all, they're just flaring it away when they can't get rid of it. But that is raw, wet gas. There are other liquids and such in there that would cause that to not be usable in your furnace if that were brought down the line. And so it needs to be processed. By the time that gas that is captured is processed, it is no longer nearly free for the company that buys it to sell to their customers. So that is the difference. That gas at the well that's being flared is unprocessed, and what is being delivered to your home or your business is processed gas, and there's additional cost to that processing procedure.
As well as shipping from the well to the plant and then into the distribution system.
Okay, I think we're at a wrap-up point. Commissioner Fedorchak, did you have any closing comments?
Thank you all for being here and for sharing your thoughts, and I hope you continue to follow this. I'm sure you will. We have the ability, you can send in comments. They go to a public comment file, and we look at all of those. And because the AARP is an intervener, they will be a party to all of the deliberations on this case. So they'll be here testifying. They'll be cross-examining the company. They'll be cross-examining AARP and their witnesses. And it's really a very productive discussion when a group like the AARP intervenes. So your concerns will continue to be elevated throughout this process. I'm quite certain of it. You heard Josh tonight, and that's just the beginning of kind of what they'll be saying throughout this case, I think. And so these concerns don't just die here. They'll be a part of the ongoing deliberation. So thank you for being part of it.
Commissioner Crashes, did you have any
just want to say thank you again to everyone for participating tonight and anyone listening that was present last night as well. We appreciate the input very much. It's very useful. And as mentioned, this goes through quite the inspection process. It's a long process, and it's carefully vetted and looked at, which we will do over the next several months, and then including as we get to the hearing date on February 28th and March 1st and 2nd, roughly, depending on how long it takes.
I'm going to also thank everyone. I'm going to adjourn the public input session, but before everybody jumps up and things become disruptive, after I adjourn, I'm going to turn this over to our IT director, Steve Call, who, thank you, Steve. This is kind of a new process we have in the way we're bringing the different areas together. It's worked very well both evenings, and I appreciate your help on that. But he needs to do some things in order to shut down the satellite sites. So, again, just give us a couple minutes before things become disruptive. But the public input session is complete. Thank you.
If I could have the people on the endpoints, please shut down the machinery on your end. Thank you.
That's it. We just make that, or do they tell us when?
I'm going to watch them.